The planet Earth spins in space. The countries of the world light up as giant letters encircle the globe. Universal. In a hospice, an attractive blonde nurse reads from an old hardback book to a bedridden senior man.
I lost no time, of course, in telling my mother all that I knew, and we saw ourselves at once in a difficult and dangerous position. Something must speedily be resolved upon, and it occurred to us at last to go forth together and seek help in the neighboring hamlet. No sooner said than done, bareheaded as we were, we ran out at once in the gathering evening in the frosty fog. The hamlet lay not many hundred yards away, though out of view on the other side of the next cove. And what greatly encouraged me, it was in an opposite direction from that whence the blind man had made his appearance. And I shall never forget how much I was cheered to see the yellow shine in doors and windows. But that, as it proved, was the best of the help we were likely to get in that quarter. For you would have thought men would have been ashamed of themselves. No soul would consent to return with us to the...
The man shuts his eyes. The nurse, Caroline Ellis, shuts the book and reaches for the man's wrist, which bears a clear tube attached by tape. Caroline, who has soulful blue eyes, feels for the man's pulse with her fingers. A female doctor passes the room's open door.
Audrey, sorry. Mr. Talcott's gone. Okay.
Mr. Talcott's ID tag is cut from his wrist, and he's zipped up in a body bag. A woman passes Caroline a cardboard box containing some of Mr. Talcott's possessions.
Front desk, in case anyone shows.
By reception, Caroline inspects some of the possessions. A framed photo, a guitar-shaped key ring.
You're gonna be waiting a while, huh?
No. Didn't we call? He said he had family.
Yeah, but they don't want to have anything to do with him. You can dump it out back.
Out back, a wistful-looking Caroline opens a huge wheelie bin. She hefts the box of Mr. Talcott's belongings, then catches sight of a bunch of other boxes that have been dumped in the bin. She reads the name tags, then looks down at Mr. Talcott's box, still in her hands. She shuts the bin lid. A pigeon flaps out of the way of a tram that cuts through the sun-dappled streets of New Orleans in the American Deep South. Caroline is on board the tram reading a local newspaper. She circles a job advert in Biro. The ad reads, seeking hospice caretaker, Terrebonne Parish, full-time, live-in, $1,000 a week. Nighttime, a band plays at a lively jazz bar downtown. Caroline's at a table with a pretty friend, Jill.
Okay, take a look.
She shows Jill the job ad.
I interview tomorrow.
What about your job?
I had enough for that place.
Why? Here's what happened?
Thanks.
Sure.
I lost a patient today, Mr. Talcott.
Sorry.
You should have seen it. The second he died, it was like they couldn't wait to get him out of there. It's just a business to them.
It is a business, but at least he had you.
It was supposed to be a business about caring. They couldn't care less.
Wait.
This is terrible in Paris. It's freaking swamps.
I get the hours I need to start nursing school, and I get paid, and I get to help somebody. My way.
They got gators in the swamps, and guys missing teeth.
Are we dancing here, or what?
Carrie, look, this work you're doing, are you sure it's not changing you?
I'm 25 years old. What's wrong with a little change?
The girls dance together amongst the crowd by the stage. Jill beams and Caroline looks relaxed, nodding her head in time to the music. Flashes of tree-covered swamps appear as the musicians play. Daytime, Caroline drives a red VW Beetle along a vast concrete flyover which stretches across the floodplains on the outskirts of New Orleans. She has Mr. Talcott's guitar-shaped keyring on her car keys. Written on the keyring, live fast, die young. Caroline consults a map as she leaves the flyover and joins an A road. A couple of women push a pram full of plants along the side of the road. Caroline looks round at them as she drives past. She drives along a tree-covered road past a murky swamp, then turns off the road onto a rough, muddy driveway. She clocks a sign. Private residence, no admittance, keep out. Caroline continues down the long, tree-lined driveway. The tree coverage gets denser as she approaches the house. Hanging branches brush the car's windscreen.
Oh my God.
She pulls up in front of the foreboding plantation-style house, which has two stories and an attic window. Caroline grabs her bag and climbs out of the car, surveying the house cautiously. She eyes the second-floor balcony and tall attic window, then shuts the car door. Reflected in the car's wing mirror, Caroline makes her way up onto the porch and approaches the front door.
Hello? Hello?
She holds the door's fly screen open.
Hello?
She pushes the front door open and enters a long, shadowy hallway. Tying her hair back in a ponytail, Caroline passes a religious-looking statue and painting as she paces along the wooden floorboards.
Hello?
Wearing a lightweight black dress, Caroline finds the kitchen. There's a pitcher of iced tea on the table. She heads outside into the big back garden, where a woman cuts a senior man's hair. A handsome young guy carrying a box appears behind Caroline.
Now that right there is what love is all about.
Old-fashioned devotion, like what you read about. You must be Caroline.
I'm sorry, the door was open, so I just walked in.
Oh, no, it's a big house. I didn't hear you. Okay. You must be getting affairs in order. Sorry.
I'm Luke Marshall,
estate lawyer. Talk on the phone.
Oh, right.
Doc's figure a month, maybe. He's pretty far gone.
I understand.
His wife's having kind of a rough time with it.
Most people do.
Luke picks up the documents that fell out of his box.
Violet, you have a visitor. May I present Miss Caroline Ellis?
She works down at the hospice in New Orleans. Caroline, this is Violet Devereaux.
You have a lovely home.
Violet eyes the pair of them, then walks off. Luke turns to Caroline.
I'm sorry. It's just hard, the idea of a stranger living here.
I understand, really.
She's Old South, you know. She thinks women still curtsy. Huh.
So, he can't talk at all?
No, stroke pretty much paralyzed him.
Which side was affected?
Both.
Both?
Happened about a month ago, up in the attic. That's where she found him. Ben. You have a visitor. Meet Miss Caroline Ellis.
Hello, Ben. I'm Caroline.
Oh. She's not from around here. She's not going to understand my house.
She's from New Orleans.
She wasn't raised in New Orleans. You hear how she talks? Who knows where she comes from?
Hoboken, New Jersey.
What, do you want a southern accent? The last one left, Violet.
All right. But she's not going to understand the house.
So the last girl left, huh?
Wait, let me talk to her. Let me straighten things out.
I can't help anybody who doesn't want me help.
Oh, she does want help. She's just scared.
What, politeness?
No, he's the love of her life, and he's dying. They've been together forever. She's losing her soulmate here. Now, I don't know about you, but that puts some sandpaper up my ass.
Aren't you a romantic?
He looks weary.
Look, the last girl quit. You're the fifth interview since. She shoots down everyone, okay? It's not personal. But you being here means he's really dying.
Well, he's dying whether I'm here or not. What'd she mean about the house?
What?
She said I wouldn't understand the house. Why'd she say that?
All I know is the check's clear. Look, forget it. If it makes you feel any better, I'm still looking for my dream job, too. All right.
So if you talked to her, what would you say?
I'd say she could look all she wants, but I doubt she found any better than you. So, she'd do well to treat you like it?
Back in town.
Okay, here are my rules. No knitting, no joining a bridge club, and no playing bingo.
Okay, good.
Good rules. I'm serious. They'll try and suck you into the elderly ways.
It's less than an hour away. I'll be back all the time.
Yeah, well, you better. Whenever you want to talk to someone who wasn't around for World War II.
Jeez, what is it with you and old people?
Come here. He'd be proud of you.
You know he would.
Jill gives Caroline a big hug and rubs her shoulders fondly. Caroline sets off. As she drives past a wide river with a high water line, she notices the car is low on petrol. She stops at a gas station. She replaces a self-serve petrol pump and goes to pay. There's a line of brick dust by the door of the kiosk. Caroline steps over it.
Hello?
There are oysters on the desk by the grubby-looking till.
Hello? I need to pay for some gas?
She clocks an old photo, then brushes flies away from her head.
Hello? Hello?
Caroline wanders through a doorway and frowns.
Show him salvation.
Somebody back there?
She saw a shadow move, but now it's still. There are three stuffed alligator heads on a shelf. A woman with milky white eyes appears behind a screen door. She's holding a baby.
Oh my. I'm sorry. Excuse me, I just need to pay for some gas.
A younger lady ushers the grey-haired woman away. Caroline turns and bumps into a tall black guy.
Jesus. 17, ma chère. 17 pour le jus. Parlez pas français? 17 for the gas.
She pays up and hurries out of the kiosk. The tall guy wolfs down an oyster, which she cracked open with a pocket knife. In the fading light, Caroline arrives at the Devereux house. In her new room, she puts a camera on a tall chest of drawers and takes a framed photo from a box of her belongings. The photo is of Caroline as a little girl. She's with her kindly-looking dad. She puts the photo on the bedside table. She carries some stuff into her ensuite bathroom, where she takes a hanging picture off the wall. A section of whitewashed wall indicates something different once hung there.
Mrs. Devereux, I'm unpacked.
There's another patch of whitewashed wall in the corridor outside the room. Caroline heads upstairs into Ben's bedroom, where there's a record playing. Ben lies in bed, staring at the ceiling.
Hi, Ben. Remember me, I'm Caroline. I'll be taking care of you for a while.
60-something Ben's eyes flick around to look at Caroline, who's by his bedside.
Well, there's not a lot of light in here for you, is there?
She turns on his bedside lamp.
So you're a fan of the blues, huh? Well, so is... You have to let go. Ben, you're hurting me. Ouch!
There you are. Time for his remedies. Scoot over, child. 9 in the morning and 7 at night. He takes his pills in powder form. I'll show you how. Be sure he drinks it all down.
What's he taking?
Oh, Coumadin and such. He gets a tremor sometimes. Don't let that frighten you. And a kiss to make it taste better.
You're scrawnier than I'd hoped. Prettier, though. I'll bet you're all marked up, aren't you?
Marked up?
Written on. I know you young people always jabbing yourself with ink and needles. You're written on, aren't you?
Not where you can see.
Well, to be bathed daily as linen's changed, and don't bother with the housework. I'm the only one that knows how.
So how long have you two lived here?
Oh, let's see. We came over from Savannah in 62.
We bought this house from a brother and a sister. They'd inherited it a long time ago from their parents. Lived here since they were children. There they are. Martin and Grace. Charming people. But they fell on hard times. Had to sell.
You keep their picture?
Yes. I like to pay my respects to the memories of this house.
As Violet wanders off, Caroline finds a hidden photo, which shows two white kids, Martin and Grace, with two black servants. Written on the back are the names Papa Justify and Mama Cecile. Caroline hides the photo.
All right, come along now.
Caroline eyes the photo in the frame that shows Martin and Grace on their own.
This is a dining room. We only use about half of the rooms. The others are for Ben's antique business. What he couldn't sell, we stored here. Except for the attic. That has crystal and china, and I keep a very close account on that, just so as you know.
She opens a wooden box.
There are more than 30 rooms in all. In the old days, they made a separate key for each room. For the owner, they made a skeleton key. This will open every door. This one is yours. I have mine. Now, the pantry's right out here. Oh, you know, we may have to ask you to go into town now and then.
Is there a mirror here once?
Violet nods casually.
I noticed in the bathrooms also there are no mirrors.
Child, when you get as worn out and wrinkled as we are, you don't need any reminding. If you want a small one for your own purposes, that's fine with me.
What'd you do with them?
Put them away.
Caroline follows Violet through a long corridor with a high ceiling.
The boy tells me you don't smoke. Well, I do smoke. I smoke a lot and I enjoy it very much. I trust that won't be an issue.
It won't.
Good. Then for the most part, just realize that I'll live here as if you're not in residence. After all, we're not kin. Are your parents still alive?
Well, my mom left when I was little. My dad raised me and he died last year.
Oh, my. So you cared for him as well?
I would have. I just thought I had more time.
Violet lights a thin cigar.
Yeah. You think too much about the time you have left. You don't spend it living. Be good to my husband. Be good to his house. Remedies at 9.
1, 2, 3.
In his bathroom, Caroline carefully lowers a naked Ben into a steaming bathtub. Ben's wheelchair is beside the bath. A mechanical lift carries Ben down the gap in the middle of the main staircase. There's a guinea fowl on the porch outside.
Oh, you don't see gardens like this back in New Jersey, I expect.
Actually, it's the garden state.
I doubt that very much. Nothing more glorious than a garden. Going every winter, back every spring.
You religious at all?
Try to keep an open mind.
That's good. That's very good. Where are my trilliums?
Oh, dipsticks. Do me a blessing, child. Will you run up to the attic for me? I have some seed packets in a box right next to the stairs.
Inside, Caroline picks up her ornate skeleton key and approaches the door to the attic, which is down a long corridor, dimly lit by lamps on the walls. She unlocks the door and opens it. She feels around for a light switch, then heads up a shadowy stairwell. There's another door at the top of the stairs. She inserts the key into the lock. She opens the door and peers around. She feels for a light switch, but doesn't find one. The wall by the door is made of thin wooden strips. She enters the attic. She spots a box of seeds and bends down to get some. Further inside the attic, Caroline spots some shelves which appear to be shaking. She slowly heads over. The upper attic door swings but remains open. Caroline frowns as she nears the wooden shelves. A tin can is trembling on the middle shelf. There appears to be a wobbling door nudging the shelf unit from behind. She removes the tin can, revealing a battered door handle behind it. The door stops shaking as Caroline reaches for the handle. She looks surprised and fearful, then grabs the handle and turns it. The door won't budge. It appears to be locked. Caroline puts the skeleton key in the lock beneath the handle, but the door won't open. The upper attic door slams shut behind her. Caroline spins round and glares at the upper door. She hurries back across the attic, opens the upper door, and heads out. She is not present as the mysterious door behind the shelves starts to shake again. Caroline heads downstairs with the box of seeds. Violet lurches out into the corridor, surprising her.
What took you?
I'm sorry. I thought the key opens everything.
The key? What key?
The key you gave me for the house. There's a door in the attic it doesn't work for.
Oh, no, the attic. It's never opened that. Well, I've got my Dixie Jones.
Why not? What's in there?
I have no idea. It's been shut ever since we moved in. Now, I have to get these in the ground because there's rain coming.
Mrs. Devereaux, Ben was in the attic, wasn't he, when he had his stroke? What was he doing in there?
You'll have to ask him, child. Be a dear and go see to him, won't you? I wonder if he wouldn't like some iced tea.
A rocking chair sways on the porch as rain buckets down from the night sky. Slender Caroline enters her bathroom, removes her vest top, and turns on the shower taps. She peers into a mini compact mirror on the shelf above the sink as she pins her hair in a bun. Lightning flashes, illuminating her naked back. She looks round in the shower but doesn't spot a shadow creeping across the bathroom. Later, she sleeps above the covers on her bed in a pair of black knickers and a white t-shirt. She wakes up with a start. She jumps out of bed and heads into the hallway. She turns on the light and approaches the foot of the main staircase. Hearing the noise coming from upstairs, Caroline starts up the staircase. She spots a light on beneath the attic door. Using the skeleton key, Caroline opens up Ben's bedroom door and switches on the light. His ruffled bed is empty. The wheelchair stands idle nearby. A record spins on the turntable. Caroline runs across the landing and opens another door. There's nothing in the room but books. She finds another room with a rocking horse inside. In the corridor, she frowns.
locked.
She runs back to his room. She opens the window. Ben is hauling himself along the porch's corrugated roof. He looks round.
Stop right there, Ben! Don't move! Ben! Stop! Ben!
He ignores her and falls from the roof. Ben drags himself along the sodden ground, his legs trailing uselessly behind him. Caroline rushes out.
Ben!
Mother, mercy, what's he done?
He got out of the window. I thought you said he was bedridden.
Oh, he's having spasms. Did you give him his remedies?
Yes.
Did you make sure he drank them all down?
I thought so.
Ben, what did they make you do?
His door was locked.
Oh, just go get the wheelchair, Caroline.
We gotta get him out of here.
What about a doctor?
In the morning, just get that wheelchair now.
Caroline hurries into Ben's room. She spots an upturned flower pot, then sees something scrawled in earth on his bedsheet. Help me.
Ben!
She hides the bedsheet in a cupboard, then pushes the wheelchair outside.
Ken!
What the damnation took you so long?
I came as fast as I could.
We're just gonna have to double his remedies. That's all I can think of.
Caroline, help me here. Help me get it. Come on. Yes.
Caroline helps Ben up. As Caroline lifts Ben in her arms, they lock eyes and she's shocked by his desperate expression. The next morning, the storm is over. Rainwater drips off the roof. Wearing wellies, Caroline scans around the garden and eyes the brown 4x4 parked by some trees.
Where do you think you're going?
She spies a small wooden boat moored at the edge of the swamp nearby.
So you're here 2 days and he already tried to kill himself. Must have some kind of bedside manner, huh?
Among my many charms.
So what exactly happened? I came to update her will. She's up with the doc, says, he fell.
He did fall.
Like what, from his wheelchair?
She sits on the back porch and nods up at the roof. Luke glances up too.
You cannot be serious. From up there? He fell from up there? How? He can't even walk.
Inside.
Please don't tell me you're quitting. I have to start over again.
Will you shut the door? I want to show you something.
You know, my mama used to say, if a lady invites you into her room, she probably isn't much of a lady.
Homespun southern wisdom grows on trees around here, doesn't it? Look at this. I found this in Ben's room last night.
Found what, his laundry?
No, it had a...
Had... No.
There was...
Had a what?
There was a... It had... Forget it. I don't know what I thought.
I admire you. You know, what you do. Hell, I wouldn't be able to take care of my own parents.
You'd regret it. I quit college to help out with some friends' bands. Out all night, always on the road. My father thought I was throwing my life away. So we didn't talk, didn't visit, stubborn and proud, and that's how we left it.
You mean?
Yeah. He was gone. Before I even knew he was sick. I guess he wanted to spare me from all this.
Oh, was that so wrong?
No one should have to die alone.
So tell me what you were gonna tell me about Ben.
Asking you for help.
Asking me?
With a look or a touch.
Mrs. Marshall? What the big day is it? Caroline, where did you see Mr.
Violet finds them sitting on the bed.
Well,
I see the children are getting acquainted.
Oh, now, Violet, you know you're the only woman in my life.
I know no such things, and remove your perspirations. The doctor has departed, so I'm ready to discuss estate matters. If you have finished soliciting your new business.
Violet heads off with a glare for Luke, who takes a business card from his wallet for Caroline.
All right. Whenever you get the time.
Caroline unlocks the lower attic door and heads inside. She goes up the stairs and unlocks the upper door, then hurries into the attic proper. Shining a torch ahead of her, she jogs over to the shelves that partially conceal the mysterious door. She takes things off the middle shelf. She kneels down and squints at the door handle, then reaches for the pin in her hair. Holding the torch under her arm, she puts the pin into the door lock. She removes the pin and finds a little shard of metal on the end of it. She knocks it against the edge of the skeleton key. She puts the key into the lock and turns it. Caroline looks surprised and removes the key. She reaches for the handle and turns it, then pushes the door open. A gust of wind from the room beyond blows dust into her eyes. She wipes them. She opens the door and climbs between the wide shelves. In the darkened room, she spots a ruined doll's head covered in dust. On a set of wooden shelves are some jars containing the preserved remains of small animals. Some skeletal remains sit alongside them. Caroline shines her torch on a monkey's skull with its jaws prized open. There's a headdress draped over the skull. She bumps into a sinister-looking stuffed dummy with stitched-up eyes and mouth. The scarecrow-style dummy has ragged blonde hair. Caroline frowns at the dummy, then spots a red hardback. She lifts the cover, revealing some loose old photos. One shows a party of well-to-do people on the porch with the two kids, Martin and Grace. The next photo is the one with the kids and the servants. Caroline turns the page. A heading, Receipt Book of Papa Justify and Blessed Teachings. Written on the next page, Chalk, Sulphur, Blood and Hair. There's a picture of a circle with eyes drawn inside it. A heading reads, Conjuration of Supreme Protection. Caroline closes the book and scans around with the torch. She finds a gold ring with three snakes carved onto it.
Caroline? I'm making some tea. Are you interested?
Violet steps inside off the porch. A fan whirs overhead.
Caroline?
Caroline goes through a box of records. She takes one out. There's a circle motif on the otherwise plain cover. Written on the other side of the cover, Papa Justifies Conjure of Sacrifice, August 24, 1920, New Iberia Parish.
Sacrifice. Are you in the house?
Violet heads upstairs and looks down the corridor towards the attic door. Caroline holds up a jar which contains something slimy but indeterminate. Hearing Violet heading upstairs, Caroline drops the jar and frowns at the fleshy-looking mess on the floor. She hurries out of the dank room and shuts the door. Violet heads up the attic stairs. Caroline climbs between the shelves, then replaces the stuff she moved on her way in. Holding the record she found, she spots Violet arriving by the second door, then goes to hide. She drops the record. Caroline sees the record in the middle of the floor. Violet unlocks the second door and heads into the attic. She scans around, but there's nobody there.
Caroline?
forgetful, child.
As Violet heads out of the attic, Caroline clutches the record to her chest and stands up. She accidentally pulls a dusty sheet off an ornate mirror. She uncovers more mirrors. She peers through the lower attic door, then opens it. The dimly lit corridor outside the lower attic door leads to the top of the staircase on the first floor. She descends the staircase. The evening light fades in downtown New Orleans. Caroline parks outside her and Jill's flat. Inside, she puts a record on the turntable. It's the record she took from the attic at the Devereaux house.
It is time, Lord. From the dry dust, out of these chains, from the devil's house. It is time, Lord. Take me. From the dry dust, break me. From these chains, bring me. From the devil's house, take me. Out of darkness, walk me. Out of blindness, lift me. Out of sadness, save me. From my damnness, please, Lord. In the time, Lord, take me. From the dry dust, break me. Out of these chains, bring me. From the devil's house, take me.
Jill enters.
Hey. Just a local band.
Wide-eyed Jill nods, unconvinced.
How about you buy me a drink?
Whatever it is, it's not your average attic. She says it's been locked up ever since they first moved in. Find yourself a hoodoo room.
They cross the busy dance floor together.
A what? Hoodoo. You know what hoodoo is? It's like voodoo, right? Wrong. Voodoo's a religion. Slaves brought to Haiti from Africa. Worship God, heaven, hell.
How's voodoo different?
It's magic. American folk magic. God doesn't have much to do with it.
Magic?
Yeah. It's part African, part European, part Native American. And New Orleans is home. Started here. My Aunt Nola's into it. She shops at a place in Algiers. Look, you said the house had a history, right? Voodoo is pretty harmless.
Harmless how?
Well, it's psychological, like a lot of that stuff. Can't hurt you if you don't believe.
So this place your aunt shops at, ever seen it?
On the street.
It's either this street or the next one or the next one.
She spots a laundry.
There.
There, that's a laundromat.
Look, that's all I know. That's where she goes.
Jill stops across the road from the laundry.
So you coming in or what?
I'm not.
I thought you don't believe in this stuff.
I don't. But I'm not just gonna mess around with it, so you wanna go in? Go ahead.
You're scared. Jill the Thrill is scared.
Kiss my ass.
We're never gonna live this down. We've come all the way out here and...
I'm not scared.
Caroline looks over at the laundry, which is open and has a few people inside doing their washing and drying. Later, Caroline pulls up outside the Devereaux house. It's dark and quiet inside. Caroline unlocks Ben's bedroom and heads inside. She carefully shuts the door. Ben fidgets in his sleep. Caroline heads over to his bedside and gently pulls the sheet over Ben's chest. She switches off a bedside lamp. In the semi-darkness, she presses her hand against the room's wall.
Good night, Caroline.
Caroline stops on the landing.
Good night.
Caroline looks back over her shoulder, then reaches down to remove her shoes as she heads down the corridor, leading to the attic door. Morning. Violet is on the landing outside Ben's bedroom. She picks up a vase of wilting red roses, then unlocks Ben's door. She drops the vase and glares. There's a mirror on Ben's wall. Caroline climbs out of bed and pads across to open her bedroom door.
I told you about the mirrors.
I don't understand.
This is not your house.
I found them. I needed a mirror for my bathroom, and so
I told you, and you heard me. No mirrors. No mirrors.
Violet stacks mirrors in the attic. Caroline appears.
I've seen the room.
What room?
The room you say you've never seen. It's not locked anymore.
No, no, child, you don't know what you've seen.
Well, you're going to tell me right now, or I'm leaving.
Violet lights a thin brown cigar in the garden.
You're not from the South. You won't understand.
That room up there? You just don't go in and throw things out of a room like that. You leave them just where you found them.
The house is theirs just as much as ours.
The house is whose? Whose things are in that room?
All right. About 90 years ago, there was a banker here. His name was Thorpe. He made his fortune cheating the poor. He was a mean man. He was a cruel man. It was him and his family and a couple of servants. Name of Mama Cecile and Papa Justifier. Sit down. Now, the way I heard it, old man Thorpe, he didn't know that Papa Justifier was a two-headed doctor. He was a conjure man, and so was Cecile. They believed in
voodoo.
That was their room.
She points at the attic window. Flashbacks of Justify and Cecile.
Oh, they were famous all through the pipes. They healed the sick and they hurt the mean. Hit a straight lick with a crooked stick, as the colored say. But old Thorpe, he just saw him as help. And he worked him to the bone. He abused him. Until one night, as the story goes, there was a party. It was the bank's anniversary. All the big muckety mucks were here. Politicians, sugar barons, riverboat tycoons. There was a lot of drinking and dancing. And a couple of trysts, I'm sure.
Justify serves drinks.
And then finally, when it was time to say farewell, some of the guests wanted to wish goodbye to the children. Nobody could find him. They hadn't seen him in hours. So being all full of brandy, they made it a game. Let's find the children, find the children. Room after room after room. Finally, someone heard music.
Bruce.
And voices. And shouting.
Up in the attic.
The kids are in a circle of candles. The servants shake violently.
Their servants were up there with the children. They were trying to teach him how to conjure voodoo. Well, Thorpe went about insane, and so did the rest of the guests. I mean, how long had this blasphemy been going on? The children said it was their fault, that they had wanted to learn. But they weren't having any of that.
The party of drunken guests forced Justify and Cecile outside into the garden. The kids watch blankly from the window as the two servants are hung by their necks on nooses hastily strung from a tree branch. The servants struggle and die as delirious guests light torches and set fire to the servants' dangling bodies.
All that power, rage, and sanity.
Thorpe and his guests punch the air and watch through wide eyes as Justify and Cecile burn.
The party was over.
The flames are reflected on the window where the kids, Martin and Grace, stare at the horrible scene. Back in the present, Violet and Caroline look up at the hanging branch.
It was a terrible thing. Terrible. Well, rumors got out, but no arrest, no trial.
Money had its way.
What happened to the family?
The bank went under. Thorpe shot his wife to death and then turned the gun on himself.
People in the bayou said it was justified as Cecile's revenge. The children stayed here till 62. But they never, ever told us why that room was locked. Or why there were no mirrors in the whole house. Now we know.
You know what?
You see him in the mirrors.
Who?
The servants. I've gone and read some hoodoo books, and they say putting brick dust down will keep harm away. So I made a
Mrs.
big circle
Devereaux.
Of it around the whole house.
You can't expect me to believe that you see ghosts in your mirrors.
The ghosts are here now. But whatever they did to him, I'm not going to let them do it to me. Now you'll leave. Like all the rest of them.
Violet heads off across the overgrown garden. Caroline stands alone looking thoughtful. The light fades as the evening draws in. Caroline brings some washing into the garden. She looks casually over her shoulder and heads towards a small wooden shed nearby. She puts the basket down on the shed's front step, then goes through the open doorway. It's dark inside. There's some rust-coloured brick dust in a thin trough. Caroline scoops up a handful. She lets the dust fall away and inspects her hand. Ben lies in his bathtub. Caroline washes him.
Some superstitious wife you got there, Ben. She thinks you have ghosts in the attic. Spooky, huh?
She dropped the soap in the water, catching a splash in her eye. She gets up to examine it in a compact mirror. Ben's gaze follows Caroline as she turns her back to him.
She says you see him in the mirrors. Ghosts in the mirrors.
She shuts the compact and kneels by the bath again. She spots Ben staring at the compact, which she put on the edge of the bath. Caroline reaches out and slowly moves the closed compact along the edge of the bath towards Ben. He twitches uncomfortably. Caroline watches him closely and carefully opens the compact so the mirror faces him. He violently thrashes the mirror away. Ben calms down.
I'm so sorry.
She eyes the mirror on the floor.
You see them too.
There's a deep frown on Ben's haggard face. His mouth is turned down in a permanent twisted gawp. Violet puts washing out to dry in the garden.
Going to town. Shopping. What for, Caroline? Caroline, what for? I just have to see.
Violet smokes a cigar as Caroline reverses up the drive. Caroline arrives in town as rain buckets down from a grey sky. She puts up a black umbrella as she climbs from the car. She heads for the laundry she spotted with Jill and goes inside. She clocks customers doing their laundry. A senior guy comes out through a doorway with a box. Caroline heads through the doorway, which is covered by a thinly spaced bead curtain. She steps over a line of brick dust and enters a storeroom with a counter.
Didn't reach again.
Mama
Cynthia, he beat me last night.
Will you use the potion that I'm going to fix for you? And it won't happen again. I can promise you that.
I'm scared.
Don't be afraid.
Are you sure that I can do it?
I know it will. It will work. Just do as I say. Don't be afraid. It'll work. It won't happen again. Yep. Don't worry about it. It won't hit you again. Just use this potion that I mixed up. I have a lot of things in here. And you use it as I told you.
Okay, I trust you, my lady.
The young black lady glances at Caroline, then dons glasses and leaves. Caroline speaks to the older black lady behind the counter.
That brick dust at the door? How's it work?
You lay a line down. Nobody that means you harm can cross it. It's how you tell who your enemies are.
It's like hypnotism, right? Suggestion. And when this stuff works, it's because someone believes it works. And if you thought, you know, magic made you sick, you might believe in a magic cure, right? Even though it's all in your head?
Somebody been working roots on you.
Say I knew someone who believed he'd been, whatever.
Crossed.
Would he believe he could be uncrossed?
What's the nature of his condition?
He can't speak, barely moves. He had a stroke, but he seems to think someone else made him that way.
And you want to know what happened to him?
Yes.
The lady grabs an empty wooden box, then tours the storeroom, filling the box with various items from the shelves.
You went in there. You actually went in. Are you out of your mind?
Come on, haven't you ever heard of psychosomatic treatment?
Yeah, but this is not that.
How much of a patient's recovery depends on his believing he can?
What recovery? This is hospice. You're supposed to help this guy die.
He believes in this stuff.
So what? Who's he to you? No, you forget it. He's not your dad. Not this one, the last one, the one before. Why did they all get so attached?
Caroline stands up.
I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry, Carrie.
Just so you know, if I'm not attached to him, I'm abandoning him. Attached is better.
I know. Carrie, I'm sorry. Okay? But would you look at yourself? You want to be a nurse and you just walked out of a witch doctor's.
It's not for me.
It's a dark, rainy night at the Devereaux house. Inside, Vilas is asleep in front of the television. Caroline sneaks into the kitchen and carefully takes a glass bowl from a cupboard. She goes up to Ben's room and unlocks the door. She fills the bowl with water in the bathroom.
Hi, Ben.
There's a crucifix in the bowl.
I'm going to show you something. Gonna be our secret, you and me.
She's also got the box from the laundry.
Violet says you didn't have a stroke in the attic. She said some ghosts made you this way with a spell. Is that what you think? Because I know a spell too, Ben. One that makes you better.
From his bed, Ben eyes the items that Caroline has placed on a tray that would normally hold his dinner. She pours oil on the crucifix, which is also a candle.
All you have to do is believe it.
She lights a match and sets it to the wick on the crucifix candle, which is an off-white colour. Ben watches the flickering flame. Caroline consults some notes, then picks up a black feather and sweeps it through the air over Ben. Lightning flashes illuminate the room. Caroline stops with the feather and picks up the bowl, dipping her fingers in the water, which is mixed with some dried leaves.
Cleanse this man. Cleanse this room. Cleanse this house.
She flicks water around Ben's bed.
His words have gotten lost. Lost and wandering in his mind. Let the water run down and wash away this condition.
She presses her wet hands onto his face.
His tongue has gotten tied and tangled in his throat. Let the water run down
and wash away this affliction.
His hands move slowly.
Send his voice to go free. Let the water run down and wash away.
Caroline spins round in shock. Ben watches her and strains to move his lips and tongue. Caroline turns back around and stares at Ben. Downstairs, Violet's eyes flicker open.
It's all in your head.
Help. Help. Help.
Ben, talk to me. I keep talking.
Help me.
Help you. Help you how, Ben? Get out of here, Mike.
Caroline! 1 second! Caroline, open
this
door!
I promise, just talk to me. What happened to you in that attic? Who are you afraid of? Tell me who you're afraid of.
Ben points as Violet enters.
What have you done? What is this?
He was struggling to get in his sleep, so I brought
him. Get away from him. Get away from him.
He's struggling.
It's all right.
I brought water.
You were talking to him?
I was just telling him a story to settle him down.
About what?
Just a story. No ghost.
That'll be all tonight, Caroline. Thank you.
I'll come back to check on him.
No, that won't be necessary. That's all for tonight. Good night.
Violet strokes Ben's hair as Caroline leaves the room. Caroline bagged up the artifacts before Violet could spot them. She carries the bowl onto the landing. Outside, the rain continues to lash down. The hallway by the front door is dark. Caroline's bedroom is the first door on the left. Asleep in her bed, she tosses and turns. She has flashes of the ring with three snakes and Justify in the hallway. A black and white flash of Cecile smoking in the attic. The blonde scarecrow shakes. A lock of hair is cut by scissors.
Grace. Caroline.
Caroline sits up suddenly in bed. Her eyes and mouth are stitched up like the scarecrow dummy. She sits up again. This time her eyes and mouth are normal. She looks exhausted and relieved. She reaches out to check the time on her alarm clock. It's 1:13 a.m. She nudges her compact mirror and clocks the reflection of a shady figure leaving the room via the door. A startled Caroline takes the key from a drawer. She steps out into the shadowy hallway and scans around. She goes back into her room and locks the door. She switches on the light. She shuts the compact mirror by the bed. Morning, rainwater pours from a drainpipe outside. In her room, Caroline packs a bag.
Ghost shit.
As Caroline grabs more stuff to pack, she spots Ben sitting in his wheelchair on the porch outside. She looks down at the photo of her dad, which sits on top of her already packed clothes. She grabs her camera. She shows photos to Luke in his office.
That attic is filled with this stuff. Recipes, spells, books of them, records of them.
I understand your cause for concern, but my family's superstitious too. We're called Baptists.
This is different.
That's charming. It's a local color.
You said yourself you're worried about him.
Yeah, well, now I'm worried about you. You know, are you not so detective?
They sit either side of Luke's desk.
When did you first meet the Devereaux's?
Just before he had his stroke. They were looking for a lawyer to update their wills.
Well, did you ever think that maybe she knew something was going to happen to him?
How? Like tarot cards in the attic? Or seance in his sleep?
I want to know why the last girl quit.
Haley, some folks to see you.
You a superstitious person, Carolyn?
Not per se.
I told my mama where I was working. She said that house has been nothing but blood and tears. That last owners were some rich brother and sister. Crazy people, supposedly. They died of strokes right after they sold the place. Maybe they found something they shouldn't. Maybe now Ben did too. It may be their mess in that room, but ain't no ghost but a spell on that old man. She did.
Do you believe that?
Don't you?
But I heard it can't hurt you. I mean, it can't hurt you if you don't believe.
I suggest you leave that house before you do.
Haley eyes her gravely in Luke's car.
Oh, for God's sake, this is insane. The man had a stroke.
So why isn't that what he thinks?
And you're going to take him away from her, from his own wife? How can you believe that...
I don't believe. The point is, he does. Hey, stop the car.
What?
Stop the car.
Why?
I've been here before. I'll show you. It's not just them.
Luke stops the car, and they climb out at the gas station on the way to the Devereaux house.
See the line across the doorway? It's brick dust. Hoodoo keeps your enemies from coming across. See the bones hanging? This stuff's got a hold on people out here.
Yeah, but it's not real.
It doesn't matter if it's not real. It's real to them.
What's wrong?
This music. I know this music.
Hey, are you sure this is a good idea?
They approach a shack.
Well...
They stop by a line of brick dust.
I'm gonna raise the gentleman.
Caroline steps over the line and heads indoors.
Hello? Excuse me, ma'am? We heard the music, your record. I was wondering...
There's no record for anyone here.
How about records by a man named... Justify?
How do you know that name? Who sent you?
It's the old woman with the milky white eyes.
Who else is in here? Someone else in here?
Oh, it's just me, ma'am.
Now stop. Now, don't you go touching.
Do you know a record called The Conjurer Sacrifice?
The old woman stands and faces Caroline.
Because I have it if you do.
You had that. You wouldn't say so.
You do know it.
Oh, strongest conjuration of all. They say Justify discovered it, but he got killed before he learned to work it. Him and his poor wife both. It's never been found.
What's it do?
It keeps you from dying. Not forever, but for a while.
How?
You have to sacrifice somebody and take the years that they have left.
Rain buckets down and lightning flashes across the night sky as Luke and Caroline leave the shack.
Hurry up, he's all over there!
Hang on, Caroline! Wait!
Oh, shit!
Now you got me spooked.
If I get proof that she's out to hurt him, will you stick by
him? I hurt him, you may kill him.
Will you or won't you?
Just listen to yourself.
Fine, goodbye.
What are you gonna do here? You gonna kidnap him?
You know something's wrong between them, you know it.
Let me make some calls, see about grounds for... Restraining order, protective custody. You're not going to get a search warrant until tomorrow anyhow.
And that'll get me tonight. I've always got Luke. Me.
Get the proof. Okay?
Caroline arrives at the Devereaux house as the storm rages. She heads in via the back door.
Devereaux, I'm back.
There's a chicken carcass by a pot of boiling water on the cooker in the kitchen. At the table, Violet cuts Ben's hair with scissors. She goes over to a drawer. She takes the red hardback from the attic out of the drawer and opens it. In her bedroom, Caroline takes her suitcase from her wardrobe. She finds only the wooden box inside.
No. No. Where's the record? It was right here.
In the kitchen, Violet pulls a page from the hardback featuring a circular diagram. Caroline exits the house and pulls her coat over her head as she scurries towards the shed where she found the trough of brick dust. She empties an old paper bag and fills it with brick dust. In the kitchen in the main house, Violet chops the legs and head off the chicken carcass, which has been lazily plucked, with feathers all over the chopping board. Caroline sprinkles dust by her bedroom door, then covers it with the carpet.
Mrs. Devereaux, could you come here for a second?
Oh. Well, Caroline, I was beginning to worry about you. You've gone such a long while.
Yeah, it's really raining out there.
It's supposed to pour all night. Keeps up like this, that swamp's going to rise and ruin my flower beds. Did you want to see me?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could take a look at this. There's a leak up here.
Oh, they're all over the house. They're just rainwater.
Yes, but if you look up close... Come on in. I could show it to you better.
Well,
Violet loiters in the doorway. She steps towards the carpet line, then stops. Caroline looks down.
Actually, I have supper on the stove. I shouldn't leave it.
It'll just take a second.
I can see perfectly from here. You want this for the sill?
All right.
Violet proffers a cloth, but doesn't move.
Could you come into the room, please, just for a second? So I can show you what I'm seeing?
Violet remains in the doorway, staring at Caroline.
You're a funny one, Caroline. I'll make us some tea.
A deadpan Violet turns and heads back to the kitchen. Caroline makes a move to follow.
Oh, and Caroline, after you've given Mr. Devereaux his remedies, would you be so kind as to join an old lady for supper?
Well,
wonderful. We should have done it days ago. I've made something real nice.
A record spins on the turntable in Ben's room. Caroline's got his medicine.
My grandma and your grandma sitting by the fire. My grandma told
we're leaving
grandma
tonight.
She pours the medicine into a nearby pot plant. In the bathroom, she injects something into some sugar cubes. Caroline continues to inject the sugar cubes. At the dining table, Violet sips broth from a spoon. Caroline sits across from Violet at the other end of the table. She eyes the pot of sugar cubes.
How's your gumbo?
I haven't started. Would you like some sugar for your tea? I put it out for you.
No, I don't think I'll have any sugar tonight.
But I thought you liked it. You always have sugar in your tea.
You think I'm senile, don't you? Ghosts in the attic, spells on my husband.
I just don't understand. These ghosts, why would they put a spell on him and not me? I've been in that room, too.
Maybe because you don't believe in them. Maybe all houses have spirits, but we just don't see them until we believe we can.
Caroline puts her spoon down.
I'm really not that hungry.
The lights go out.
Don't move. I'll fetch your candles. Eat your gumbo. No fiddlesticks.
Violet gets up, then steps back to move the pot of sugar cubes. She goes out of the room. Caroline jumps up and uncorks the bottle of liquid she injected into the cubes. She pours some liquid into Violet's iced tea.
So?
Violet comes back with two lit candles.
Dip my candlelight. There.
Violet puts the candles on the table and sits back down in her chair. She picks up her iced tea and takes a sip. Caroline watches her closely.
So is that the storm or the ghosts?
Well, say what you will about spirits. I've always wondered if there wasn't something we could learn from them.
Like a spell? I have great respect for your husband. And whatever he thinks happened to him, he's fighting it. What did happen to him, Violet?
You haven't touched your gumbo.
Oh,
What have you done to him?
I made that special for you, and you haven't even touched it.
What have you done?
He is my husband, and I am his wife, and I will do to him whatever I wish to do.
He's not safe in this house.
What? What? What is this? You've done something.
He's not safe in this house, not with you.
It's my house.
I'm taking Violet.
No!
Violet stands, holds her head, then topples over.
Oh, too late. Not again. You little whore. He's mine. He's mine. Keep him in this house. Keep him in this house. Keep him in this house. He's mine.
Violet tries to draw a chalk circle. Caroline grabs the page from her.
Protection.
Violet's fallen unconscious in the dining room. The chalk circle is unfinished. Caroline barges into Violet's bedroom and checks hurriedly through some drawers. She finds a line of brick dust under the bed, then a circle carved in the floorboards. Caroline roots through a wardrobe and finds the record. She finds the sheet with "Help Me" written on it.
Oh, you bitch.
She finds a lock of blonde hair on the floor, then checks her own hair by torchlight. There's a lock missing.
Time to go.
Caroline lowers Ben down the stairs in his wheelchair. They bump uncomfortably as they descend. They head out onto the porch. Caroline carries Ben over to her car. His hand slides down the driver's window.
Come on, Ben. Let me get you out of here. Just hold on.
She puts Ben in the passenger seat, then hurries down to the driver's side. Violet wakes groggily in the dining room. Caroline drives towards the gates at the end of the drive. They're locked with a chain. She gets out and grabs the chain, then rattles the gates.
Keep her in this house.
Caroline reverses, then stops and puts the car into gear.
Hold on.
She accelerates towards the gates through the pouring rain. The car hits the gates, which buckle but stay locked. Inside, Violet pushes herself up off the floor awkwardly. In the car, Ben stares gravely ahead as Caroline reverses, then accelerates at the gates again. The car slides out of control in the deep puddles and crashes into a concrete ornament. The car grinds to a halt. Caroline jumps out as Ben slumps. Inside the house...
Caroline!
Violet grabs a shotgun off the wall in the house. Caroline carries Ben into the garden shed and lays him down.
I'm gonna get help. I won't leave you. I won't leave you. Okay?
She covers him with a sheet, then runs out to the car. She ducks for cover as Violet comes outside with a torch and the gun. Caroline ducks behind Violet's 4x4.
You think you can take him out of this house? You think you're stronger than me? You've no idea how strong I am, Caroline.
Violet spots Caroline as she makes a break for it.
Caroline!
Her hair sodden with rain, Caroline darts between trees.
You're just making it harder on yourself!
Caroline heads for the little boat by the swamp and pushes it out into the water.
You can't get away, Caroline! You understand me? You'll never get out of here, child! Caroline!
Caroline jumps in and rows.
Caroline!
Violet spots Caroline rowing away and fires. The shot strikes the rickety boathouse roof. Caroline rows under hanging branches on a wide, quiet river. The rain has abated. Frowning, Caroline rows past a drooping tree and spots a campfire up ahead. She looks relieved and rows faster. In the pouring rain, a pickup parks in downtown New Orleans.
Thank you.
Caroline jumps out by Luke's house.
Luke!
Jesus Christ.
She tried to kill me. She had a gun. She knows I know. Ben's in trouble. He's still at the house. Come on, please, Luke. I left him. We gotta get back out there.
The hell we do.
I left him there.
You didn't leave anyone, okay? Now slow down. Tell me what happened. She tried to kill you? Sorry. Miss Devereaux. Heard from Caroline. Why would she? What's going on?
He grabs a dictaphone.
Okay. What happened tonight? Hang on a second. We need to record this.
Caroline inspects the record player. She recognizes the record label, frowns, then puts the player's lid down. She spots a photo of Luke and a woman. Caroline finds some law books, all titled as beginner's tomes. Beneath the book, she's shocked to find photos of herself. On the desk amongst the secretly taken photos of Caroline going about her business, a ring with three snakes on it and a skeleton key. She frowns. Luke appears and tries to garrote Caroline from behind. Caroline struggles, grabbing the garrote as Luke pulls it tight. They stumble backwards onto a drum kit set up by Luke's fireplace, then they fall onto the floor together. Caroline falls unconscious as Luke stares down at her.
Good night, child.
Luke's car drives along the empty overpass into the swamps. The headlights cut through the night. Caroline wakes up in the passenger seat wearing a cloth gag.
Hello. Hello.
A hell of a thing. Everywhere you look, a whole new world all around you. It's like being born or dying, because I wouldn't know.
They arrive at the Devereaux house and drive through the open front gates.
Oh, hush, hush, darling, I know it's hard.
We're home!
He's missing. She's hidden him somewhere.
Where is he, Captain?
It's not him, it's me. You want to sacrifice me?
Where is he, Captain?
Why are you helping her?
Is everything ready?
No. I can't start anything till I know where he is. What's our tale if he gets away? Caroline, you will tell me exactly where my husband is. There's nothing anybody can do for him, so there's no need to try. Where is he? Where is he, Caroline?
Caroline clocks the brick dust in the doorway to her room.
He's in the garden shed.
Don't scratch her up any more than sure it is.
She's teaching you. You help her kill me, and she'll teach you how. Ben knew to kill me.
That's enough, Caroline.
You want to shoot me? Shoot me.
Stop right there, Caroline!
Lou aims the shotgun at her back as she heads down the main hallway. Caroline stops and turns around to look at Luke.
I want my father's picture. I want it with me.
Violet bursts into the garden shed, which is partially flooded with rainwater. She shines a torch around inside. In the house, Luke lowers the gun.
Jesus. All right. You want your picture? I'll get your goddamn picture.
He grabs her by the arm and drags her towards the bedroom. Caroline elbows Luke and lurches into her room. Luke hesitates as he spots the dust, then Caroline slams the door shut. In the shed, Violet uncovers Ben, who fends her off weakly with garden shears. By Caroline's door, Luke tries to fire the shotgun, but finds it isn't loaded.
Fuck!
Violet overpowers Ben in the shed. He drops the shears. Caroline kicks a window out.
Violet, she's gone outside!
With her hands tied behind her back, Caroline runs around the outside of the house. Luke watches her go. Luke goes back inside. Caroline doubles back and cuts the rope around her hands on a shard of glass. Violet appears.
Here! She's here! Wait! Come here! Help! Come on!
Caroline climbs up a trellis. Luke grabs her foot. She kicks him off and clambers into the house through a window. She grabs pots of brick dust and tours the house, dropping lines of it.
She's fixed the door!
Luke spots her making trails around the main stairway. Caroline runs upstairs.
Violet! I can't get up the stairs!
Caroline hurries upstairs and stops by the doors, pouring dust along the bottom of each one. Violet lurches out of a doorway and grabs her.
Try to use my clips on me?
She blows dirt into Caroline's eyes. They grapple with each other in the corridor, smashing into a lamp, then hitting the wall. Caroline winces as Violet strangles her. Caroline spins Violet round and launches her over the banisters. Violet falls down the stairs and lands in a broken heap at the bottom. An enraged Luke looks up at Caroline, who finds a phone on the floor upstairs. The lift starts to ascend.
911 emergency.
My name's Caroline Ellis. I'm at 1750 Bayou Chapelet in Terrebonne Parish. I need police and paramedics. There are people hurt here. We're trapped. Please hurry.
Violet is in the lift. Caroline makes another call.
What time is it? Jill!
Carrie?
Jill, I'm in trouble.
Caroline!
It's real. It's all real.
You where? What?
I'm in the Devereaux house. Caroline!
What's real? What?
She pulls the phone line beneath the door and finds it cut.
Caroline! You can't get away, Caroline!
Violet hauls herself along the corridor. Caroline rushes up to the attic. A circle of candles is alight on the floor.
Caroline!
She locks the upper door and pulls out the protection spell page.
Chalk. Silver.
She rushes around the attic looking for the ingredients listed on the page. She rubs her eyes.
Silver.
In a drawer. Caroline carries the things through to the circle of candles, which are surrounded by mirrors. She kneels in the center of the white candles and lights the red candle she's brought with her. She draws a chalk circle inside the candle perimeter.
Hurry! Four eyes. Three.
She pours out sulfur and cuts a lock of her hair off. As Caroline cuts her palm with a knife and stamps bloody handprints onto the circle around her, Violet shoves the upper attic door open.
My child, I believe you broke my legs.
You can't touch me. You can't get near me. See this? This is your spell of protection.
Is that what that is now? And who exactly gave you that spell? All that circle protects is you from leaving it.
Holding the knife at arm's length, Caroline looks down.
You stay back! I'll kill you! You stay away!
We've been waiting for you, Caroline. Waiting for you to believe. It doesn't work if you don't believe.
In a time, Lord, from the dry dust.
Violet hauls herself up the side of a standing mirror.
I don't. Oh, I think you do.
This is the flesh. Flesh. Flesh.
I don't believe.
Violet grips the mirror's sides. Caroline stares at her own reflection.
I don't believe
Caroline's reflection changes and becomes the little girl, Grace.
Flesh. The boy.
I don't believe.
The frail. The weak.
I don't believe. I don't. No!
The attic shakes violently. The reflection in the mirror changes to an image of Violet, then to an image of Cecile, the black servant. Behind the mirror, Violet screams and falls. Then the mirror lurches across the room and smashes into Caroline, who falls down unconscious. The candles go out around her. The attic stops shaking. Lights flicker on around the house. In the attic, still lying on the ground, Caroline opens her eyes. Looking groggy, Caroline sits up and pushes the mirror off her legs. A battered-looking Violet begins to wake. Caroline stands up and pushes her hair away from her eyes. She steps across the attic towards Violet, who still lies in a heap. Caroline reaches for Violet's cigar pouch and takes one. She also picks up the lighter and inspects it. The lighter works on the second try. She holds up the cigar.
Thank you, child.
Caroline lights the cigar and takes a puff. Luke comes in through the upper attic door.
Cecile? You alright?
You're fine now, Justify.
That bit harder than the lawyer, wouldn't she?
It's harder every time. They just
don't believe like they used to. Gotta get them riled up. I told you I wanted a black one this time.
You know the black ones never stay. Huh? Beggars can't be choosers. I think it fits you beautifully. It's better than violet. Or grace, even. We'll get used to it. We always do.
They look down at Violet on the floor.
Thing folks don't understand about sacrifice. Sometimes it's more of a trait.
No.
There, Caroline.
Jill arrives at the Devereaux house. Police and paramedics are with Luke and Caroline in the hallway. Jill looks stunned.
We thought it was just a fall, but now she can't move or even speak.
Like a stroke or something.
Carrie? Dear me.
On a stretcher in the hallway, Violet gawps at Jill.
You called me.
I called you.
For help. Don't you remember?
Carrie's not herself right now. I'm Luke Marshall, Devereaux's lawyer.
Hi, Jill Dupay, her roommate. Oh, Jill, yes, I did call you. I'm...
Fiddlesticks, I don't know what possessed me.
Hey, it's all right. Come here.
They need real care now. They can't stay here. This is all my fault.
Oh, Carrie, no, it's not. It's not...
Jill gives Caroline a big hug as Violet is wheeled out of the house on the stretcher by two paramedics. Caroline watches them go.
Someone should ride to the hospital with them. Maybe... Jill, would you mind? And we'll meet you.
Of course. Whatever you need.
Caroline touches Luke's arm on her way past him. Jill looks outside.
She meant so much to them. I'd be in here. I know it wasn't for long, but... they really loved her.
Why do you say that?
Luke steps over to Jill and puts a hand on her shoulder.
It's in their wills. They left her at the house.
In the ambulance, Violet, or as we now know, Caroline in Violet's broken aging body, looks across at Ben, who stares back at her sullenly. In the house, someone slips on the three snake ring, which was sitting on the mantelpiece by a framed photo of Papa Justify and Mama Cecile. ITFC audio description by Alex Newman.
Dream come
standing sometime. Strong winds of promise that will blow away the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining on.